ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guest today is Dr. Jeff Johnson. He's the Valentine Radford, Missouri Associate Professor of Marketing at UMKC's Henry W. Block School of Management. Prior to academia, Dr. Johnson worked inside sales, field sales, product management, and division management at Union Pacific Railroad in Omaha and Los Angeles. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Very excited to speak with you today.
A lot of the marketing research we discuss on the podcast relates to consumer behavior and how to market and sell to consumers. And this is why I was really thrilled to see your paper, which focuses on business-to-business sales, because the dynamics when selling to a business are different. And one of the challenges that B2B salespeople face is that they're often selling into a buying center. So they're selling into a group of diverse members with varied perspectives, and the presence of a dissenter within that group can cause problems. And your research looked at this, and I'd like to discuss some of the strategies and situational factors that can help salespeople better navigate the process and enhance their effectiveness. First, is it the B2B salesperson's imagination, or is dissent on the rise?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that as far as whether you'd be more likely to encounter dissenters. I would say, like, with the complexity and dynamism that we see in the B2B space, it's likely to be on the rise. But I do think this is a phenomenon that most salespeople have encountered at some point. It's very rare to have a buying center where if you have, for example, five members, all five are 100% yes, or on the other side, all five are 100% no. It's very common to have a situation where there would be maybe four that are giving very positive, either verbal or nonverbal indications, and one that gives very negative. And so I think that the situation itself is something that is encountered by most salespeople. Most of the salespeople I've talked to is something that they were very readily familiar with and something that they've encountered on a fairly regular basis in their roles.
Is internal organizational dissent different?
I absolutely do think that there is a difference between addressing dissent that occurs intra-organizationally between that which occurs inter-organizationally, with the reason being of when we look at dissent and how that's handled and flows through the organization, that's handled by others in the organization that share those same perspectives and share those same ideologies and have the nature of the firm there. Outside of the organization, if we see the salesperson, they have to address dissent that's occurring in a different organization with a lot of missing a lot of the contextual factors that one might have in their own organization. So I think this across the boundary handling of dissent has kind of a different flavor to it than we would see strictly within the bounds of an organization.
Right. Several times you've said complexity. And so this is a complex topic. And as an academic with a practitioner's background, you know that people can be skeptical of research because lab results don't necessarily replicate real life experiences. Can you give us the view from 50,000 feet of how you conducted your research?
Yeah, absolutely. And that really kind of speaks to the genesis of this project as well. And that was, this is something when I was in B2B sales prior to academia, this is something I encountered and something that I actually found very difficult when encountering of this notion of you have four people on board, they're ready to go, but one person that's really trying to undermine. And so my process in investigating was to speak to those that are in these B2B sales roles. And so I spoke to 46 individuals with experience in a wide variety of industries and B2B to tap into their insights as far as, you know, what is this phenomenon, something that's worth studying? Is it something that's impactful for them? And most importantly, what do they do when they encounter this? And I was very encouraged in some kind of initial interviews of talking to B2B salespeople where they came up and said, yeah, this is really huge. We might have a situation where we have everybody in the buying centers, everything's going great, they're very positive, but just this one negative person can take a potential sale and really kill it just because now this negative person interjects all these bad type of questions that take you on the wrong path. And so the idea with the project was speaking to these B2B salespeople to look at what are the ways that they conceptualize this, and then what are the ways that they can address this to potentially, you know, mitigate what can be a sale killing type of phenomenon.
Was it all North American based, or was it multi-country?
That's a great question. All North American based. I do think there could be some value in extending this in future research and looking at other contexts. And I think especially if you think of context, international context, where the notion of face is something that's very important, that could be a very different type of deliverable on how we would address these buying center to centers than perhaps in a North American context.
Yeah, I was thinking the cultural angles there might, especially if you have a salesperson from one culture going into another culture, the ability to read context might be tricky.
One of the strategies that's actually advanced by the respondents was kind of a very direct approach to addressing dissent, where a salesperson might kind of actively and maybe slightly aggressively shut down a dissenter directly. And that there were some reasons behind that, but the reasons for that might be okay in a North American context, but perhaps in a different context, international context, that could have a different outcome for the salesperson.
Absolutely. Salespeople, like all of us, can't control what other people do. We can control ourselves. So the salesperson can take these steps to neutralize the impact of the dissent. You broadly divide that reaction into two categories: mitigating reactions. So that's in the moment, in the meeting, mitigating it, and then remediating reactions, which happen after the dissenting event. Is one type of neutralizing strategy more powerful or more effective than the other? You know, if you neutralize it, you know, in the moment, is that the best way to go, or do you always need to do both? How do these two things relate to one another?
Sure. Yeah, both can be important, but I will give you a definitive answer on this one, and that is mitigation. Of the two, mitigation drastically more important, with the reason being of remediation's wonderful. And once we've addressed the dissenter and we're trying to follow up after the sales call, that's great. But if during the meeting, this person has really eroded the sales call and we potentially lost the other four that are on board, that's going to be very problematic for us. So I would say out of the two, much more important for the salesperson would be the mitigation, that in the meeting, what do we do? And this is also, I think, maybe a little bit more difficult. And I'll speak to myself as a salesperson of it might be a little bit easier after the meeting to craft a perfect email or take a different approach on how we're doing that. But real time, it is very challenging to think, how do I do this? And how do I assess, should I address this individual? Should I ignore them? What should I do? What's their motivation for doing this? And how do we move it forward? So I think for me, I would say mitigation out of the two would be the higher priority.
So even if salespeople can't control the other people, they can understand them, and they can try to understand the context in which their sale is being made. How should social and emotional intelligence be deployed to help a salesperson understand the dissenter and the context, and thus have a more effective strategy?
Yeah, absolutely. In their experience of trying to kind of interpret dissent and then decide what to do with it, something that the frequent three themes came up of how salespeople process this, and this was prioritization. So how do they ascertain the person who's dissenting, really kind of how important they are within that organization? They also focused on manifestation, which was basically looking at how strongly was the signal of dissent coming across. So, for example, was it a member saying blatantly, I think this is a terrible proposal, or I don't like this product at all? Or was it maybe overt, nonverbal, or more slight type of behaviors that are indicating dissent? And then lastly was extrapolation. So that was looking at why. So that would be the salesperson in a real-time manner is trying to figure out, what's the cause of this dissent? Because they'll have maybe a different remedy depending on what they think the causal factor is for the dissent. How social and emotional intelligence played into that from respondents is they talked about on the first leg of that on prioritization, having really strong social intelligence and being able to know that very quickly. Where do people basically kind of fit in this organizational hierarchy? And if they're able to do that at a very high level, then they're able to better optimize this situation and deciding really kind of how to respond or whether to respond to that individual. Emotional intelligence played a little bit more into the manifestation side. So, for example, if it was a very subtle type of dissent that was noticed, a nonverbal cue, posture, something like that, a change in tone or whatever that might be of the customer, or for extrapolation, understanding, well, why? What's the context? What's a reason that they might be acting in this way or acting out in front of their other organizational members was more towards the emotional intelligence side. So a little bit of differential between social and emotional, but both helpful in kind of making sense of and understanding the right response to this situation.
In focus groups, sometimes people find that somebody will have a really strong opinion and skew the focus group. Can you have a situation or when somebody may not be organizationally powerful, but they can still have outsized influence relative to their power in a situation? Or is that less likely because hierarchy really does play a part?
No, that can be a huge issue. So sometimes, especially if we're talking about a very technical sale, so a very complex type of product, it actually could be a case where just somebody who, say, for example, is an engineer, doesn't have the final say of the purchase. They're not the buying agent in the buying center. But they're an engineer that has great understanding of the product's technical specifications. That individual sometimes can be the if we call it from a power, even though they're not making the decision, they may be the most powerful person in the room that might make that decision actually happen. So absolutely, it is a really complex process for salespeople to understand, you know, based on the dynamic and what the sale looks like and all these contextual factors, how important is this individual and what do I need to do to move forward in the sale? Call.
Right. Well, okay. So let's say, I give you all these scenarios. Let's say someone isn't important in the hierarchy, and let's say they're not the technical expert, but they're in the meeting. Sure. Can you just shut them down or ignore the dissent and move forward? Or is the way the person manifests their dissent still important? You know, how do those two things relate, I guess?
Absolutely. So in that example that you gave there, if it is somebody who might be lower in priority in the buying center, that's expressing very overt dissent. And this was evidenced by the respondents in this project where they said it might be somebody who they weren't even sure why they were in the room here, but were highly, highly negative. In that example, it seemed to be the go-to strategy for salespeople would be the direct approach to mitigation. Those individuals, when they were dealing with this individual, often took a fairly harsh stance on that, and they would actively try to shut that person down. And their thought with that is they could spend a lot of time and effort on trying to placate this individual and go through the sales process with them. However, by doing so, what they indicated is that a lot of times by doing so, they may lose the other four people in the room. So you had, for example, the decider, the buyer, they were all ready to go. And now we're spending a lot of time on somebody who's very, very negative that is bringing up things that maybe we don't want to go down that path with and can actually jeopardize the sale. So in those instances, yes, the salespeople basically tried to fairly politely, but fairly directly shut that individual down and move on to the next part of the sale.
So I know in other contexts in marketing, we strive to avoid the negative bias theory. And it sounds like this is playing into that, what you just described. Can you explain what that theory is?
Yeah, negative bias theory is basically saying that when we attend to factors, that the negatives can sometimes outweigh the positive. And so if you can think of something like a B2B sales call, if we have a buying center to center that's injecting a lot of negativity, even though there might be a lot of positive aspects of the sales call and a lot of positive information and positive responses that have occurred throughout that interaction, the negative can sometimes become more salient in the minds of the people in the buying center. And so after that meeting's over, when we look at kind of the takeaways for the members, if we have seen a lot of dissent come from one of the members, that negativity might be much more salient in that group and cause perhaps a misstep, even though there might have been a lot of positive information that was also presented. Yeah. So for this, when we're trying to make the sale here amongst our organizational buying members here, if we do have, especially if this would be somebody like an approver or decider in the process here, that's negative, that's unlikely, then we're going to be able to consummate that sale. So in the sales process, we'll look for how do we identify that? How do we resolve the objections? And that's a lot of what sales literature focuses on. I think the difference in buying center to centers is it's dealing with maybe a negative or a difficult customer, but now in this social context, which does change a lot of the behaviors we had, And one of the things that I thought was interesting that came out from speaking with these B2B salespeople was a notion of distributed mitigation. So meaning oftentimes a salesperson might be the one to try to address the dissent that was occurring, but sometimes what they did is basically recruited allies within the buying center and had them address the dissenter. And so their idea with this was basically, you know, are we able to address this dissent, but by doing it by somebody who's intra group versus extra group, maybe that dissenter will shut down a little bit more quickly, or we can get back on topic because it's coming from somebody who I trust or who's an in-group versus out-group maybe. And so I think there's a benefit towards the distributed. That was one of what I thought was one of the more interesting approaches brought up of the salesperson said, you know, I might not even be the one to address this, but I will recruit an ally and say, hey, Bob, you know, this was something you mentioned 3 years ago. Can you talk about your experience to Steve and have them make that type of remedy?
Did people do that in the moment? You know, you talked about how mitigating in the moment is more effective than after the meeting. So is that recruitment something they would do in that first meeting? Okay.
Yep. Real time. So that would be one where they would recruit on the spot. So as the dissenters may be injecting a lot of negativity into the discussion, they would turn to one of the other members in there that maybe they had perhaps a little bit deeper or longer relationship with and ask them in a nice kind of socially acceptable, polite way to address the dissenter. And oftentimes based on a previous experience or their experience with a product or whatever that might be. And they did do that in a real-time manner. They also would do that beyond afterwards, where they would talk to the people afterwards and say, hey, by the way, you know, it looked like this member wasn't, is this something you can help with? So there was a kind of an after the fact one in remediation as well. But yeah, I think the most effective that this was done was real time in mitigation.
You have a great chart in the paper, and it outlines how to deal with a dissenter and if it's more effective to be dismissive or direct in handling their objection. For example, if someone's overtly dissenting, you recommend being direct in dealing with a dissent in that moment, but not in the post-meeting catch-up. In fact, many of the ways in which it's advisable to handle people in the moment is not advisable for the follow-up. It seems like there's an inverse relationship between those two. Is that my imagination that I'm seeing that? Is that...
No, not at all. And that was something that I found very interesting as well, in the fact of something that might be very effective real time. In the example you gave, that direct would be very important in a real time manner. So if I have a dissenter that's very vocally talking about how negative my product is, or giving some, as one of the respondents said, false news or fake news about me as a salesperson or my organization, how important it is to address them head on in that meeting to avoid that devolving into a very negative conversation with the overall buying center. After the fact, though, they said, I could go direct, but what I'm likely to do by doing that is just keep having hostility with this member. So if I go to them directly, I'm likely to still kind of have this negative type of interaction and negative type of conversation. Whereas if instead I use a distributed approach and I talk to other members, so an ally in the buying center, to have them help me, and that could be them addressing this member directly or providing me some information on maybe why this is occurring and how to best handle this individual, can be a lot more efficacious than going into a direct conversation after the fact that maybe has a lot of negativity that doesn't resolve.
I think that that's really important and interesting, the fact that in the moment, your direct response, part of it is a performance for the other people there. But if you're private and you're doing this after the fact, that does it even serve you, or does it just serve to exacerbate unhappiness? And then you have no idea what happens when you're not talking to the person in the organization.
Absolutely.
If somebody is very important, and they are overt in their objections, should you be direct or should you be deferential?
Yep.
You've got somebody who's important and they're being overtly hostile. Which is the more important characteristic? Is it that they're important to the decision-making process, and so deference is just important? That's just...
No, that's a great question. And there was a discussion of this amongst the respondents of what's the degree of overtness. So overtness kind of as a binary, like subtle or overt, you know, that's useful for classification. But they mentioned, you know, there's overt that would be hyper overt, somewhat overt. So somewhere along that spectrum. So that would kind of dictate. And I think what a lot of the respondents thought with that is, most of the time when we have somebody that is super high important, so that maybe that's the, you know, the vice president or the CEO or whoever's truly going to be the decider to sign yes or no for the sales proposal, that normally in those situations, the deferential approach is going to be the best approach. So if we tried the direct one where we just said, look, I'm going to shut you down. So CEO, that's absolutely not the truth. This is not the case with my product. I don't know where you'd get that and move on. That's probably going to backfire for the salesperson. And so instead of that, if they really try to understand and take them through the sales process, you know, thank you, Mrs. CEO. That's an excellent question. And to address that, we have X, Y, and Z, and kind of going through that process might be a more efficacious type of approach than it would be is if we tried to shut that individual down. That having been said, though, there was discussion on the notion of if it was really bad, if it was very overt and we could tell that we had sold the rest of the buying center, there might be instances that we would take a more direct approach. But I think overall, the consensus was when we're dealing with somebody who's very high in the prioritization hierarchy for the organization, deferential might be a smoother tactic.
Right. And so, and therefore, depending on where that person falls in the hierarchy, hierarchy trumps overt, not overt behavior.
Exactly.
Like in terms of how you're managing it. When dealing with a difficult customer, so that you've already made the sale and they're your customer, empathy is important. And we talked earlier about social and emotional intelligence. What role does empathy play in how the salesperson navigates the descent? So they're still in the sales process section. How empathetic should they be?
Great question. And this was something I also found really interesting from respondents in this project. And that is empathy. They basically talked about empathy as an inverted U in handling buying center to center, such that moderate empathy was better than even having not a lot of empathy, or conversely, having too much empathy could be negative. And the discussion behind that was basically having a medium amount of empathy. We could kind of put ourselves in the shoes of the dissenter and try to address this in a positive manner. And obviously, low empathy would be negative. So where we just shut everybody down, that could be negative as well. But where I think the interesting nuance came from this was having high levels of empathy or being basically too high in empathy. What respondents talked about is some salespeople that are very, very high on empathy treat every dissenter in kind of a differential type of approach. So they'll really try to go through the sales process and address all their needs and make sure they follow up with questions. And while sometimes that can be effective in handling the right type of buying center dissenter, with the wrong type of buying center to center, that can actually be the wrong approach. And so having kind of a moderate level of empathy where we're able to understand and respond in a way that's appropriate can be better than just having a very high level of empathy where we might have a strategy that could be potentially suboptimal in addressing the dissenter.
Right. I mean, that's sort of going to that negativity bias, right? If you spend too much time being empathetic with the person, that's all that anybody's going to remember is all the complaints.
Absolutely.
If I'm a business and I'm trying to arm my salespeople, what are the things that I can do to help them be more successful, given that I've listened to this podcast and I understand this complex relationship and what's going on? How can I help my team be better?
Yeah, there were two main strategies that were brought up for that on an organizational level. One would just be shadowing. So when we have a junior salesperson, having them go with the senior salesperson to a buying center interaction and kind of picking up on those nuances. But I think the main one that was voiced and one that I think is really important was group role playing. All the salespeople said, sure, in my job, I absolutely got training and we did role playing, sometimes with a positive customer, sometimes with a negative customer. But almost all of the salespeople said, that's always one-on-one. So when I'm doing that role play, I have my customers acting very negative and they're very angry and I have to go through that process with the customer in the role play, or maybe they're positive and I try to pick up on closing signs and move forward in the sale. What's interesting though is group role playing is something that wasn't offered. And what they mentioned in the interviews is it would be super helpful for them to have one where, for example, in the role play, there was four or five different people that they role played and were making their presentation, their sales presentation to, and then having one of those people be very negative and act out, and then trying to navigate that social dynamic now of having the four play in a safe space of a role play would be very helpful. And then addressing this when it occurs in real time, because I do think that is a challenge for myself and other salespeople as well. When this happens in real time, it is something that happens and it's a negative, and really knowing how to respond to that and what processes and what strategies I can utilize can be hard real time. Whereas if it's role played out before, maybe the salesperson can accrue those strategies and do a little bit better in a real time fashion.
Absolutely. That having, even if the role play is a bit stagey and you can feel familiar, you know, this is familiar. And so it doesn't knock you off your game quite as much, because the social dynamic is so important. It really is different when you're doing a series of one-on-ones. Did people ever talk about that? Because sometimes when you're making these sales to a sales center, you may have a group of three in one meeting and one-on-one in another, and you're not in the group conversation, but you know they're going to be having that group conversation. Did that ever come up, or was it always just about the group meeting?
Yeah, the context was the group meeting, but they did speak to the fact of how, in their opinion, across, and I'm generalizing a bit here, but in their opinion, the one-on-one, they said, was relatively easy, because when they had a negative one-on-one customer, they said, look, I'm just going to take them through the sales process. I'm going to be very open. I'm going to talk through all their needs. We can take as much time as they want, because I have that luxury in a one-on-one type of setting, whereas I don't have that in the group setting. So I think their perspective overall was, this does make it much more difficult, because now I have to attend to the other four members that maybe I'm putting off the sale by attending to this one individual.
Right. That's really interesting. Last question for people who are making B2B sales, who are listening, what is the one thing, what's the big takeaway that they should keep in mind?
I think the thing that I found most interesting was maybe I'll cheat a little bit here. So kind of two main things. One is having kind of a diverse strategy of responses in a real-time manner on contextual conditions, such as the hierarchy of that individual, how it's manifesting, why it's manifesting. So having maybe a custom approach to each of those situations. But then I think the biggest takeaway, or the one that I found most interesting, was the distributed approach. So when this happens in real time and we have a dissenter emerge in the buying center, how effective it can be to, instead of me as a salesperson addressing it directly, recruiting a member from that I know is positive from the buying center team and having them be the one to address the dissenter, just can get past some of those barriers. And whereas I, as a salesperson, when I try to address the dissenter, they may shut me down immediately. They may be very open to the intra-organizational member. So it could have a very, even if the same content was said for me as a salesperson or from the intra-organizational member, could have a very different outcome and effect on the dissenter.
Very, very interesting. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed the discussion.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next. I'd like to close by thanking my production team at Up Next, my friend Rob Naughton, the voice artist who recorded our open, and of course, all of you, the members of our audience. Thank you. I'll be talking to you again next time, right here on Up Next.